Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell at ESPN. We are here on Monday, December 17th, 2018. Week 15 of the NFL season is basically in the books. Just have the Monday night game tonight to get to before we finish up week 15. 2 weeks left to go. But after this Panthers-Saints game tonight, we pretty much have a lot of the playoff picture kind of figured out. Just a matter of seeding and a matter of basically figuring out the final couple wild cards in each conference. However, and we're going to start the show here, as you might expect, we are going to start the show talking about the Chicago Bears, who clinched the NFC North yesterday. And as you might expect, joining me to do that is the most hardcore Bears fan I know, a person who, it sounds like, at least to my ears, has been recovering from whatever he was doing after the Bears game until the time we're recording this, which is late afternoon on the East Coast. Joining me, of course, to talk about the Bears and the rest of the NFL in Week 15 is Chicago Bears obsessive and ringer writer Robert Mays. Mr. Mays, how are you?
I'm not doing so great. I wish it was because I've been out celebrating the entire night, but it's really just because I'm kind of deathly ill right now and have been for most of the last 2 days. So I've not been able to enjoy it as I would have otherwise, but it's still been a fun 24 hours, I can say that.
Now, a good friend might have let you rest and not bothered you to record a podcast, but fortunately, I'm not a good friend. I don't have to worry about that. So
that's true. You're not. I also feel like you've enjoyed playing it up or are going to. You don't mind that I'm playing hurt for you.
You're playing hurt just like pretty much nobody on the Bears is, because the Bears are about the healthiest team in football, as far as I can tell, in most of the ways.
That's why it was kind of a pyrrhic victory for a moment yesterday when the Eddie Jackson injury happened. What kind of figured to be the game-sealing interception. So as much as I wanted this to be unadulterated joy, part of me was a little bit worried because losing Eddie Jackson on that play would have broken my heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did seem like sort of a monumental moment, right? You're playing Aaron Rodgers. People know how you feel about Aaron Rodgers. You know, people can remember the last time the Bears nearly made the playoffs and that fourth down play where he, you know, pretty much sunk that era of the Bears. And now you have the opposite. You have Eddie Jackson coming in and breaking Aaron Rodgers' 400 plus pass, I should say, interceptionless streak with an interception in the red zone to seal up the game for the Bears. I mean, is this the most satisfying Bears team to you, or the most exciting Bears team you've watched, you know, as an adult, basically?
I think the 06 team was really fun. I just think that the victories they had that year, the style in which they did it, I mean, you remember that Arizona game, that felt as like, even as much or more of a magical run as this season has been. I think personality-wise, this team is maybe more enjoyable. I think the Mac element of it has given it a nice little boost even from the beginning. Eddie Jackson gives them that kind of defensive player that can score in any single time he touches the ball. But what they've been able to do on offense kind of changes it. That's where it's different. You know, it's not Musin Muhammad and Rex Grossman. It's Matt Nagy queuing up and dialing up and creating these awesome, really creative play calls. It's Tariq Cohen doing something crazy every single game. It's just the general feel of that team, and them dancing in the locker room, and just the general vibe that they have. That's why I think it's more fun. But I think that there have been seasons, maybe in a way that have felt a little bit more magical than this one has, and maybe just because I haven't let myself lean fully into it yet.
Are you leaning fully into it now? Are you all in on the Bears for the playoffs?
Yeah, I think I have to be. I mean, there's no reason not to be. And I feel like the reason that I've kind of had a little bit more trepidation this year and years past is because I know more. You know, doing this for a living and kind of being able to understand where the creases exist and where the cracks are, that part of me has always had this bit of hesitance about how excited I'm getting about the Bears, because I think a lot of people are looking at this as, I don't know, the first year in a 2-3 year run. We both know that's not how it goes. Right. I mean, think about what happened with the Jags and think about how quickly this all can change. And you talked about just the health that they've had. They're never going to be this healthy again. The defense is never going to be this good again, because it's never going to be this complete again. So in my mind, part of my concern is that maybe this is the year where they can do it, and I still don't know if they're good enough to. That's what's kind of been looming over whatever just pure joy I would have about this.
I mean, in terms of the creases, like you mentioned, are there, what are the spots that still stand out to you? It's like, oh, this is a weakness that some other team is going to exploit when we start playing tougher teams in January.
I mean, the quarterback. I think that
you said it, not me. Bears fans, do not yell at me for criticizing the quarterback. That was Robert Mays of Illinois who said that.
That's the problem, is that they're going to have to play three games most likely, unless the Rams have some weird kind of stumble over the next two games. They're going to have the three seed. They're going to have to play on a wild card weekend, and they're likely going to have to play two of those games on the road, whether it's against the Rams and the Saints or whoever. Mm-hmm. I mean, that probably would be against the Rams and the Saints if they played on the road, but if you assume the Rams and the Saints are going to win those games, they're going to have to play on the road. You have two road games for Mitchell Trubisky and three playoff games for Mitchell Trubisky. It just feels like in one of those games you're going to have a bad Trubisky game that ends up torpedoing you. I hope it's not. I hope every game is like the one he played yesterday, where there's just kind of one random fumble, but for the most part he doesn't miss a ton of throws high. He doesn't throw the ball to the other team, and he gives his team a chance to win. I hope that that is the version we see for the next month or so. But we've been given no indication that that's the version we're going to get for a three-game stretch when the games matter the most.
So if they're the three seed, right now, who would they be favored to play as the six? It would be Minnesota?
Minnesota.
Ooh, that could be interesting. I mean, the Bears could beat the Vikings.
That really frightens me, especially, one, with how Minnesota looked yesterday, and two, they're playing them in Week 17, and if the Rams, for whatever reason, it's still mathematically possible for the Bears to get the two seed and they have to play in that game, it's really hard to beat a team three times.
Is that true? I feel like I did a study on that. I don't remember what I found, though.
I think it's really hard to beat a team three times. Maybe that's anecdotal, but I don't want to play the same team three times. I guess I'll say that.
I disagree with you, because I kind of want to see what the Bears run out for a vanilla offense with Matt Nagy in Week 17 against the Vikings. I want to see what happens in that game. I think that would be really interesting sort of track.
That's what I'm saying. If they play them with nothing to gain and they just walk right out and say, here's the game, we don't care, that's fine. But if they actually have to play them and it's three games of just division opponent really going at it back and forth, that I don't want. I kind of want there to be nothing on the line in Week 17, and they just walk away, and they come back the next week and say, we showed you nothing.
I just want to see Mitchell Trubisky running, like, the Madden 94 pro set offense against the Vikings. I think that would be a lot of fun.
I don't want Trubisky doing anything in Week 17. I want to see Chase Daniel running the Madden 94.
I'm also all for that, I guess. I want to see either of them running a very vanilla offense. So what would be their ideal playoff scenario? So they play the Vikings, you would figure, in the wild card round, it's 3 versus 6, and then they would get the two, who would be the Rams.
Play the Rams.
Which is not ideal, but then, I don't know, if the Saints get upset by, I don't know if anyone's upsetting the Saints, but...
Dallas, right?
I mean, I understand that happens. I get that that happened once. I'm skeptical it's going to happen again. If they play
again,
that's
what I'm saying. That would be the only team that could do it.
Seattle.
The Saints only played two games, and before they played the Bears, it would have to be the Cowboys to beat them.
The Seahawks could beat them.
Are the Seahawks going to play the Saints?
No, I mean, if the Seahawks beat the Cowboys, they would play the Saints.
Oh, beat Dallas. Yeah, excuse me. That's right. That's right. Excuse me. I'm sorry about that. Yeah. I'm sorry. I've gone over so many playoff scenarios in my head. I'm starting to just gloss over in terms of what can actually happen.
I mean, is it like do you think it's not, do you think it's impossible to imagine a scenario where the Bears do enough on offense and Trubisky plays well enough on offense for the Bears to win those three games?
No, it's not impossible to imagine. It's a really hard road, but it's not impossible to imagine.
I mean, I have to admit, I'm thinking back to 2007 when I saw Eli Manning, who was playing worse than Mitchell Trubisky is right now, basically looked like he was about to get benched for most of the second half of the season, and then they won the Super Bowl that year and beat the 17-0 Patriots. It's not, you know, I'm someone who's very skeptical of Mitchell Trubisky, but I do think that there's, you know, this is a winnable formula. I mean, this is a team that has beat the Rams and beat the Rams quite comfortably in a game where Trubisky was really not very good. If he's more competent in that game and they get the same sort of defensive performance, they could have won that game by a lot more than what they won it by.
They can do this. And when you go back to the 07 Giants or other wild card teams that have made this sort of run, the Bears have the best defense in the NFL, and it's not particularly close. And if you look at every single advanced metric, they have by far the best group in the league. Mm-hmm. And if you lean on that and the quarterback just doesn't actively lose games for you, they can win the Super Bowl. I think that that's an incredibly tough ask, and I am not necessarily betting on it, but I do think it's possible.
What surprised you the most about this defense?
I think just the play of the secondary overall, mm-hmm. how good Fuller has been. I don't know. I guess nothing really. I expected them to be really good. Just the overall health is the most surprising thing, because that's been their Achilles heel for the last couple of years. I always thought that Mac was the piece that could unlock them, mm-hmm. because it would make every single member of the front four better. It would just change the clock in the quarterback's head and help everybody in the back end. The ascension of Eddie Jackson has meant mm-hmm. a lot. Him kind of taking a whole nother step. I mean, that interception, the pick six he had against Detroit, that's Ed Reed stuff.
Yeah.
Just the play diagnosis, being able to jump on that ball, understanding when to take a chance and a big one. Nothing has really been shocking to me, but for it all to happen in concert, I think that's what's made them so dangerous.
Yeah, the team I'm comparing them to, and I wrote a little bit about this in my column today, you know, I compare them to the 2017 Jags, and in some ways they are, you know, similar, but the team that might make more sense is honestly the 2011 Niners with Vic Fangio, that first year Harbaugh was there, where, you know, they had a lot of talent on defense, but then it clicked. They, you know, they added a couple guys in free agency, and things just sort of, they brought in Alton Smith, and he had 14 sacks that year.
Oh, Alton Smith's rookie year, yeah.
Yeah. And then they got Carlos Rogers, who had never been able to catch the ball, kind of like Kyle Fuller, had 6 interceptions that year. Deshaun Goldson had 6 picks. I mean, they had sent multiple guys to the Pro Bowl. And the offense was not necessarily great, but they could run the ball, and they had some big play guys. And they had, you know, they had Crabtree, who was a big body, who was going to make tough catches. And they had Alex Smith, who was a limited quarterback, but who could, you know, who was going to be safer than Trubisky for sure. But, I mean, a team that they could win a lot of games with that formula. And, of course, I think if they had had better luck on catching punts in the conference championship game, they would have made it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the offense, and they actually don't run the ball that effectively on a consistent basis. The run game has been a problem at certain times this year, mm-hmm. more than the passing game, which I know that the numbers bear that out in a way that anecdotally it doesn't, but that's true. And I think that the strength of this team is that they've been able to spread the ball around to a lot of different guys, and Nagy consistently creates windows for Trubisky. Whether he hits mm-hmm. them is an entirely different story. They've done a lot of RPOs over the last couple of weeks that he's mm-hmm. come back to Burton in the middle of the field. They've done a lot of stuff recently where they've done some pin and pull things inside to give Cohen running lanes. They just do such a good job when something doesn't work of saying, okay, let's chip away at a different solution here. Mm-hmm. I think that's what's been the coolest thing to watch over the last couple of games, is that, maybe not the Rams game, but especially this week, mm-hmm. just seeing how many different concepts I've never seen before with a team that's had success on offense relatively. I mean, the walk-in touchdown that Howard scored, I don't know if you saw it, mm-hmm. but it had a jet motion to the right with yep. Miller, and then it had Burton coming back across the formation to block the defensive end, Clay Matthews, and Howard just walked in. I don't think I've ever seen a team do that before. Mm-hmm. And it was incredibly effective. And just to see something like that happen in week 15, where you can actively understand and actively watch a coach trying to do new things and trying to not stay static, that's encouraging to me. And that's why I think that with the playmakers they have, even with Trubisky, they'll be able to find points in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dan Orlovsky was the one tweeting about it, where he was freaking out because they blocked two different plays. I mean, they could have done either of those yeah. run plays, and they had them both blocked, which is sort of scary.
Yeah, it was awesome. And just watching it, I was like, I've never seen that happen before. And I've seen a lot of NFL plays, and it's very cool to watch your team do that this late in the season.
I don't know what that's like. I don't have that experience with my offenses for the teams I follow as a fan. But it's very nice to see it happen to your team. I mean, what would be a successful playoff run for the Bears? Like, if they get to the conference championship game and they lose because they, you know, they just can't compete with Drew Brees, would you feel satisfied? Or is it at this point yes. they have to get to the Super Bowl? You would be. Okay.
Yeah, I'd be satisfied. I just would be disappointed because I know that this is maybe their best chance. That's where I would fall. I wouldn't be upset that they didn't, because they might never go again, but I definitely would be satisfied. I mean, that's more than you could have asked for coming into this season. I mean, think about the Rams. The Rams didn't go to the Super Bowl last year mm-hmm. in year one of Sean McVay. I mean, going to year one, going from worst to first, is really, really hard.
It is really, really hard, as it turns out. And next year, you figure, well, the Vikings are still going to be good. The Lions, I don't know what's going to happen with the Lions, I have to admit. But you figure the Packers are going to be better just because they're going to have at least someone who has looked at a playbook over the last 6 years running the offense with Aaron Rodgers, no?
Yeah, absolutely. You think the Packers are going to be better. You think the Vikings will be bring back most of their talent. Mm-hmm. And again, the Bears' defense just will not be this good next season. I mean, it's almost all but guaranteed. I mean, what is the last team that had a truly transcendent defense that did it the year after? I mean, the only team that I can remember recently that's been able to sustain that sort of success year by year is the Wade Phillips Broncos.
Right.
And again, it just, you're not going to be this healthy next season. It's almost, it's like math. It's a rule. It just doesn't happen. And the Jags are a perfect example. The Jags defense is good this season, but they're not what they were last year. And that drop off is all important. To drop from 1 to 6 or 7 in DVOA, I mean, that is a huge, huge gap if your offense doesn't make up for it.
And I mean, the offense could make up for it in 2019, but the thing that might also come up that might scare you, I know I don't, you're very hesitant to talk about this topic, but I'm going to bring it up, is there's not a 0% chance that Vic Fangio is the head coach of the Green Bay Packers in 2019.
No, he may leave. And I don't think, I hope he doesn't. I am at this point kind of banking on the fact that he's a 60-year-old lifetime assistant who just will say, I don't really want to take that on. But that's probably wishful thinking to me. If I were the Bears, I would just give him as much money as he wanted to be the coordinator of the Bears.
How much do you think the Broncos, because Wade Phillips wanted a raise and a contract extension from the Broncos a couple of years ago. How, if John Elway could go back in time, you would figure he would not, you know, he would not go out and draft Paxton Lynch in the first round. He would let the Cowboys draft Paxton Lynch. The second thing he would have done is hand Wade Phillips a suitcase full of $100 bills, no?
Yes. I just don't understand why you wouldn't. You're a franchise in the third biggest media market in the country. Mm-hmm. You print money. Why wouldn't you just do everything you can to sustain this version of your team? The most fun version of your team you've had maybe in 3 decades. Mm-hmm. It just would baffle me if they decided to do anything but just follow every single path they could to make sure you tried to keep this intact, as hard as that might be.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I'm being honest with you, Mays, and I feel like I need to be as a journalist here, I mean, Vic Fangio did want the Bears job before last season, did want a head coaching job, was frustrated by not getting it, obviously. I think it worked out well for all parties involved this year, but, I mean, this is his chance. And I think there are a lot of teams who, you know, when you can't get the next Sean McVay because that person might not exist, Vic Fangio might be the next best thing. And going out and getting an offensive coordinator who was a QB coach this year, I mean, if the Packers end up with, I don't know, John DeFilippo and Vic Fangio, that could be a pretty scary tandem with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I don't really want to think about that. Let me enjoy this for like 24 more hours, and then I'll start to entertain that.
All right, Mays, we have certainly celebrated the Bears and what is going to be pretty much a guaranteed Super Bowl here on the show. We'll get to the Rams in a moment, but first, I wanted to talk about our pals at SeatGeek. And every week I'm coming on, I'm bragging about SeatGeek. I use it all the time. You might want to use it as well if you're perhaps someone who wants to go see a Bears playoff game. You may not get a ton of opportunities to do that. It might seem right now like they're going to make it back every year. As we've been discussing on the show, that might not really be the case. So you might want to take advantage of your opportunity if you're a Bears fan or a fan of any other playoff team while you have the chance. And it's so simple. Just got to download the SeatGeek app. They're going to go around the web for you. You don't have to go from site to site. They're going to rate the tickets that are available, so you know you're getting a good deal on the tickets you buy. And the tickets are going to be reliable, and they're going to show up when you want them to show up. So you're not going to be stuck traveling to Chicago, not knowing if you're going to get tickets to what might be the last Bears playoff game for a long time. Of course, it could be one of many. I hope it works out that way for Bears fans, but I wouldn't take that risk. I would go ahead and get tickets using SeatGeek. And best thing of all, you can get a discount. Get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. If you haven't used it before, just download the SeatGeek app and enter in promo code Barnwell to get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. My last name, Barnwell. $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase by using promo code Barnwell today. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets. Now back to the show. The Rams, who you mentioned, you know, could possibly fall short in the postseason and, you know, could be in a bit of a rut and could cost themselves the number two seed in the NFC. And that might be happening. I mean, this is a Rams team that over the last 2 weeks, Sean McVay has not had the answer for opposing defenses sort of swarming Jared Goff. And I think what's interesting is that there are a lot of reasons why you could say this is happening, and Cooper Kupp figures is one of them for sure. But, you know, over the last, since that Vikings game, I think I put it in my column last week and I haven't updated it, but it's probably going to be pretty similar. Since that Vikings game where Jared Goff looked like he might be an MVP candidate, he has the same numbers as Nick Mullins. And like Nick Mullins is, you know, playing pretty well, but I mean, Jared Goff has been very average at best, I think, over the last 2 months, and he missed a lot of throws in this game.
To me, the problems are twofold. It's one, not having Cooper Kupp and just what he presents to your offense and just the different sorts of elements, him as a blocker, all that stuff. And two, teams daring the Rams to run the ball and not paying attention to all the window dressing that goes into that offense. Just saying, fine, use the jet motion. We don't care. We're not going to follow it. We're not going to bump down just because you're using it. Fine, you're going to take a hand off the Todd Gurley. We're not going to bite on it. So we're going to let him run for 8 yards. We don't care. They're essentially daring the Rams to use their play action or to not use their play action game. Right. They're daring the Rams to run the ball and to hand off the ball in those jet sweeps because they don't want to get hit that field. And it's working because it's forced the Rams into their dropback passing game. And that has not worked off successfully. Dewey's had a lot of trouble this year.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a major problem for them. And Jared Goff, I mean, his numbers in the Bears game, obviously, were not very good at all. And then some people blame that on, on the weather in Chicago. And that could be an issue. I mean, this is a guy who spent his entire career pretty much at home in California. But I mean, Jared Goff's numbers against pressure have been very bad this year. And the Eagles, for whatever weaknesses they have in the secondary, they're a team that is going to bring a lot of pressure. They have the defensive line to get pressure on you. We know that from last year. We saw it in this game. And Jared Goff, I mean, he to me at least, and I'm not a quarterback analyst by trade, but he looks shook. I mean, his footwork is inconsistent. He's missing throws. He obviously the rhythm of the play action game really suits him, I think, more than that traditional dropback game.
Last night, Jared Goff used play action on 17.5% of his dropbacks, which is about 20% less than his season average. They lead the league, and I believe it's around 36 right now. They are not being the version of the Rams offense they want to be. They've been forced into their play action passing game, their dropback passing game, far more often than normal. And one, that doesn't give Goff the windows that he wants. And two, it affects their protection because play action has helped them out in two different ways. They're able to gain blocking angles on certain guys they wouldn't because of the play fake, and you have defenders that are a little bit more hesitant. So you're just forcing them to play the version of this passing game they don't want to. If I were an opposing defensive coordinator, every single time the Rams lined up in shotgun, I'd be celebrating on the sideline. And they did it a ton last night.
Yeah. And I mean, it doesn't, you know, you're not going to have your linebackers constantly be wrong. You're not going to have your safeties staring into the backfield trying to figure out what's coming next. And I wonder what the solution is. I mean, I talked about it a little bit with Orlovsky last week, and I thought, you know, maybe they go and they don't spend all their time in 11 personnel, and, you know, they try and change the way they line up. But I mean, this is really the first sort of, it feels like the first sort of mini crisis in Sean McVay's stewardship of this team, where it's felt like, you know, pretty much without any rhyme or reason or any way to stop it, it's been consistently great. When they've had bad games, it's mostly been their own fault. I mean, this is a, you know, it was one thing when it was the Bears last week, where the Bears were the best pass defense in football and it was on the road. But the Eagles, I mean, they have that great pass rush, but this was a bunch of, you know, backups in the secondary and guys who are inexperienced. It was Kevon LeBlanc, Rasul Douglas, Devontae Maddox, and Corey Graham next to Michael Jenkins at safety, or Malcolm Jenkins at safety for that secondary last night. I mean, this is not a unbeatable secondary by any means, and you would figure the Rams would have had more opportunities, and they were huge favorites to win this game, but that did not happen. So, I mean, do you think this is an intractable problem for the Rams? Like, is this a, you know, their ceiling is now capped because teams realize they can do this, or is it just going to be about, you know, Todd Gurley sort of taking over and being more effective as a runner?
I think it's a problem. I think it's a problem because the Rams use 11 personnel on all of their plays, all of them. It's not 80%. It's not 85%. This is who they are. And in order to overcome the predictability that comes with that type of approach, you need to rely on the bells and whistles all around how you play football. You need to line up differently. You need to use motion. You need to do all that stuff. And if teams aren't reacting to those things, then you're in trouble. It's going to be a bad road for you. And the other thing with the Rams is that McVay, and I was with the team last week, and I was talking to a lot of people about this. Mm-hmm. And just the idea that McVay is able to do a ton of stuff because he understands the rules of the defense, and that is a huge advantage for him. And a lot of the things they do on offense are predicated by manipulating those rules. Mm-hmm. If defenses are going to stop reacting the way that you predict they are because they're going to change their rules for you, that's going to be an issue. And I think that's what we're seeing right now with the Rams. We saw it when they played Detroit. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's beyond just this two-game stretch. They struggled against the Lions. And it's because the Lions, in the same way, said, we don't care. We're not bumping down. We're not following these guys. And if you can't pull the strings based on the defense's principles, then you're in trouble if you're using the same 11 guys on every single play. And I feel like that's what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that a little bit in when Alabama plays Georgia, where we have Kirby Smart and Nick Saban, where, you know, they know each other's checks because it's the same defensive scheme or the same defensive thinking. So it's okay. Well, we know what they're going to check to if we make this move. So then how do we, you know, how can we exploit that? And then on the defensive side, how can we, you know, change our checks to account for that? So they don't know, the offense doesn't know what we're going to switch to after they, you know, make this motion or they make this personnel substitution or they line up in this way coming out of the huddle. And I mean, it's a really interesting sort of struggling. We think about that 11 personnel, and you remember, I'm sure you remember, but with the Giants and with McAdoo, I mean, it was always a thing where, oh, he's so stupid and he's so naive because he's always in 11 personnel and teams know what's coming. And McVay, it was like, oh, he's a genius because they're always in 11 personnel and you don't know what's coming. And the truth is never as easy as those sort of simple labels for what's coming. I mean, I think it's, you know, you can stay in 11 personnel if it works, but I think they have to at least consider making some changes. I think that even if it's not going to be as bad as it's looked the past 2 weeks, and in this game, the Rams still scored. I mean, what, 23 points? They could have had more if Goff had hit more throws. It wasn't like they were terrible on offense on this game, but it's going to, you know, I think they do have to mix it up at least a little bit just to give teams something to worry about. I think that they have to at least, you know, whether it's adding more stuff, whether it's sort of changing the stuff they've shown or the tendencies they've shown, whether it's sort of running the ball with Gurley and daring teams to stop it and then getting the play action to work again. You know, maybe they do have to establish the run, which a phrase I hate typically, but might make a sense here. And I don't know, I guess the problem with that is I don't know if Todd Gurley is healthy enough to do that right now.
Also, do you want to lean on your running game in 2018 as the basis of your supposedly explosive offense?
Maybe for a week. I think just to give teams something to worry about.
That is not a solution that I feel comfortable with, no matter who your running back is, even if it is Todd Gurley.
I don't know. What would be your solution? If you're Sean McVay, what are you doing to change things? That's not good. I at least have a solution. I just have an idea.
I don't have a solution. I mean, if I had a solution, then I should just walk. I should drive over to Thousand Oaks right now and tell Sean McVay to hire me for his staff. They clearly don't have a solution. So I don't know. I think they're going to have to go back to the drawing board with stuff like this because, I mean, even if you want to write off the Bears game as a road game against the best defense in the NFL, and even if you want to write the Eagles game off as kind of another little fluke, that's just three games now. It's impossible to rule out the Lions game in terms of looking at their passing game struggling. I know they put up a decent amount of points in that game, but they did not look right. So, I mean, this is three games now, and that's real to me. That's long enough to say we really need to consider what we're doing with our approach.
All right, Manny, so let's talk about the Eagles and the rest of the NFC picture in a moment. But first, I want to talk about Indochino. And guys, I'm someone who has to occasionally, foolishly perhaps on the ESPN side, be on TV. Of course, everyone goes to weddings. Everyone has opportunities to wear formal wear. I would recommend you get something that's going to make you look good because maybe you're really good looking. I'm not. I can't rely on my looks, but I can get by with a made-to-measure suit that fits me great. Of course, in the past, I went just to your sample men's store, just bought a suit off the rack. It was fine. I'm not going to lie, I survived, but it was not the same as having a suit that actually fit me head to toe. And it's really simple because if you want to, you can visit a stylist at their showroom in Indochino and they'll take your measurements personally. Or if you're lazy like me, you don't have to even leave the house. You can measure yourself at home and then shop online with those measurements at Indochino.com. You choose your fabric inside and out. You choose your design customizations. You submit those measurements. You submit your choices. And then a tailor makes your suit for you. It is the exact suit you want. It fits your body perfectly. It is professionally tailored and then mailed to you in a couple of weeks. You can't beat that. You're going to look as good as you're going to look possibly with any piece of clothing. Everyone knows how good you're going to look in a suit, and it's going to be the exact look you want. So if you want to dress, for example, like the guys from Dumb and Dumber, well, why not get that done? Have it custom made for you and have it fit to your specifications instead of Jim Carrey. If you want something that's maybe a little more appropriate or a little more practical, well, Indochino is going to do that too. And this week, my listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359. It's such a great deal. $359 at Indochino.com. If you enter promo code Barnwell, my last name, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L, at checkout, that's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit, and shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code Barnwell for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. It's an incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Now back to the show. On the flip side of this game, we'll talk about the Eagles briefly. Do you think the Eagles should trade Carson Wentz, and where should he go?
I mean, absolutely they should. Nick Foles is clearly their quarterback of the future. But, no. I mean, this is silly. We'll see what happens with Foles. I think that there are enough dumb teams in the NFL that one of them will probably try to give Nick Foles $20 million a year next year. But at this point, I think you just have to wait out Wentz and hope that he comes back healthy next year. And you understand that you need offense to make it work. I think this team is going to come back in full force next season when everything kind of subsides. So we'll see how much Wentz or Foles magic we can get over the next month. But I guess until over the next 2 weeks, they're probably not going to make the playoffs. But I don't know. It's a tough thing for Carson Wentz. I feel bad for the guy.
Yeah, I do too. But where do you think Nick Foles is actually going to land? Assuming he leaves Philadelphia, where do you think he will be week one of 2019? Will he be starting somewhere? And if he's starting, where will it be?
I think he's going to be starting somewhere, yes. I think, you know, a weird team that I think might work for him, that if I was – and it depends on the quarterback choices these teams make. Mm-hmm. Would it be a shock to see him in, like, Tampa?
Usually people from Philadelphia retire a little later than Nick Foles before they go to Tampa. But I could buy it. I mean, it depends on, like you said, it depends on who they hire as their head coach. But wouldn't be out of the question by any means. Fitz is going to leave. Yeah, I mean, there's not going to be a lot of jobs available. I was writing about it today and thinking about Flacco, thinking about, you know, I think he's going to go to the Jags, but how many other teams are going to be in the market for starting quarterbacks? You might look at the Giants in Washington. That might be it.
So here's my – I think that there are going to be more than you think, but I don't think they're going to be in the market for a veteran starting quarterback. Because that's where the Jags are, right? Because the Jags, at the very least, have to pay Bortles $10 million next year. Mm-hmm. Even if another team signs him and kind of digs into those offsets. So you're paying Bortles $10 million, mm-hmm. and you have that rough cap situation. Can you give Flacco $20 million? No. So really your only recourse there is to draft a quarterback, mm-hmm. and have your quarterback payroll be something like $16 or about $20 million. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what a lot of teams are going to do, because the teams, in my opinion, that are in the running for a new starting quarterback are teams with some quarterback money on the books. It would be Jacksonville. It would be Miami. You know, teams like that where they can't just say, oh, we'll throw another $15 million because they're already paying the guy that's not playing for them. So I think there are going to be more jobs available than I thought they were going to be coming into the season, but I think they're going to be filled with more rookie quarterbacks than I thought were going to get jobs or get chances in this draft.
Yeah, I mean, the Giants would be one of the few teams where you'd think, okay, if they're going to go and trade two first-round picks to trade up for a quarterback in this draft, that would kind of make sense given their cap situation. But, I mean, I don't know that I want to give up those picks when my cap situation is as bad as their cap situation is at the moment. So, I don't know. I mean,
the Giants have a top 10 pick, don't they?
Who is a top 10 pick?
The Giants.
The Giants are top 6, I believe, no?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. They don't have to trade two first-round for quarterbacks.
No, I said the Jags, the Jaguars.
Oh, the Jags. Oh, with the Jags, I would do it.
You trade up?
But the Jags have the eighth pick right now.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, I still think they might have to go from eight to two to get ahead, you know, to trade up with the Raiders, for example.
If I were the Jags, I would trade a lot to go get the quarterback that I want.
So right now the Cardinals have the first overall pick. Is that correct?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, so the Cardinals are not going to be drafting a quarterback with the first overall pick. The Raiders are drafting second. So if you're the Jags, would you trade up? Would you give up the fifth pick or the sixth pick or whatever and a future one and a future two to get from five to one?
I don't think you have to trade that much to go up and do that.
I don't know that I agree with that. If there's only one quarterback in this year's draft class,
like six to three.
I understand, but one has a certain cachet. What did the Titans get when the Rams moved up to?
If I was the Jags, I wouldn't try to go all the way to one. I mean, do you think that there are how many quarterbacks are in the top 10 of this draft? Do we think?
I have absolutely no idea. But the Raiders are at two, and the Raiders probably are going to take a quarterback now.
So, all right. So let's hypothetically say this. Let's say that Justin Herbert comes out, just for argument's sake. So the names that have been thrown out: Herbert, Drew Lock, Haskins, Will Greer. We do this every year where we pretend that there aren't going to be that many quarterbacks that are drafted in the first round and teams are going to be a little hesitant about them and everything else. Teams are so quarterback desperate and so desperate for cheap quarterbacks. You think the quarterbacks aren't going to get overdrafted this year? So many guys are going to go higher than we think they're going to go. So that's what I'm saying. If you're the Jags and you're sitting at eight and you're not attached to one of those guys necessarily, but you know you just need an option. I mean, maybe you just don't give up a ton and you try to get one of those guys. I have no idea because I don't know what the scouting is going to be. I don't know what's going to unfold over the next 6 months or so. I guess 4.5 months. But I just think that if I were the Jags, I would do what I can to get a quarterback because the amount of money you've spent in free agency, you need one now. You have no other options but to go get one now to try to save your franchise for the next two seasons.
And I mean, look at the draft order right now. It's according to Pro Sports Transactions. It's Cardinals at one. Cardinals aren't going to draft a quarterback. Raiders at two, most likely, or at least plausibly going to draft a quarterback at two. And then Jets at three aren't drafting a quarterback. Niners at four, no quarterback. Jags at five, a quarterback, most likely. But Falcons no at six. Lions no at seven. Then Giants at eight and Bucks at nine. So that they could be.
So there you go. You don't have to do a lot of moving around, which is really nice. I mean, you just kind of, I would just call the Raiders bluff and just make them pick one, and then you pick one at five if you're Jacksonville.
Here's the problem, though, Maze. The Raiders might not... Calling the Raiders bluff is not the strongest game because the Raiders don't even know what cards they're playing with, let alone...
That's true. I was just writing that earlier. I was like, John Gruden has a cache of free agent money and three first-round picks, but he's liable to do anything with all of those, so I don't know if that's a good thing, necessarily.
John Gruden may try and draft Ricky Williams with one of those draft picks. That's not out of the question.
I would not be surprised.
Well, I'm going to be surprised with the next segment we have coming up on the show after the break. It is a very exciting game that I have crafted for our friend Mr. Mays. We're going to come back with that and more Bill Barnwell Show here in a moment. Welcome back to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, VSPN. I am joined by a very sickly Robert Mays of The Ringer. And in lieu of asking him to recap games, in lieu of relying on him to carry the show as it usually does when we are recording together, instead I'm going to ask Robert Mays here in this segment on the show to guess that offensive lineman. A game I've been meaning to play when we have Mays on the show for a long time now. But essentially, Robert Mays, would you characterize yourself as a expert on NFL offensive linemen?
I would characterize myself as an enthusiast, which is why I'm not that excited about this game, because it can only end poorly for me.
Now you see why we are playing the game, Mr. Mays. I have a lot of faith in you. You are, I think you're an expert NFL offensive lineman. I would say you are more than an enthusiast, but basically what we are going to do here is I have the week 15 lineups for the NFL in front of me. Robert Mays, I am going to name a player or name a team.
So many guys are hurt. This is going to be terrible.
So many guys are hurt. It's true. I'm going to give you a team, and I'm going to give you a position or a range of positions, and I'm going to ask you to name some or all of the NFL offensive linemen. Now, this is a tough game, so I'm not expecting you to get every one, but I think you can get a fair amount of these. I'm going to give you some easier ones to start, and then we're going to work our way into some tougher ones. Are you ready?
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, let's start with this. Just a simple one to test it out. Robert Mays, can you tell me who the left guard for the Houston Texans was in Week 15?
That was supposed to be easy?
Yeah. That's the most prominent lineman on the team, I would say. Nick Martin's probably the most prominent lineman, no? He was a free agent addition to the team this offseason.
Is it Senio Calumete?
It is Senio Calumete. See, this is easy. You got this.
That's just a stab in the dark. All right, let's keep going, I guess.
That was not a stab in the dark. All right. Can you name for me the left side of the Jacksonville Jaguars offensive line in Week 15?
I honestly don't think I can.
Well, you can probably get one of them.
Robinson is currently hurt. So Omame they signed in free agency. He's their left guard.
Close.
No, they've not. No, excuse me. The Jags. Wow, this is really fun. See, this is how far the Giants have fallen. Is it the two guys the Giants signed this offseason in free agency are now the left side of the Jags offensive line?
That's correct.
Right now, it's Eric Flowers and Patrick Omame.
That is correct. Eric Flowers and Patrick Omame have made their way from the right side of the Giants line to the left side. Yeah, I figure that's a very common, you'd figure as a Giants fan, I'd bring that up.
Oh, God. Okay. I can't believe what the hard ones are going to be.
How many times have you won 30 Rock Trivia?
I've only won it once.
Okay. How many times have you come close to winning 30 Rock Trivia?
Oh, no. Excuse me. I've won it twice.
See?
I've won it alone twice.
This is offensive line trivia. I have faith in you.
I know way more about 30 Rock than it's all offensive line.
Well, unfortunately, there's the Venn diagram between 30 Rock and NFL offensive linemen consists of you, so I can't really make the questions any more 30 Rock themed. But Eric Flowers, of course, was cut from the New York Giants earlier this year. Do you know who his replacement at right tackle is right now? Because I have to admit, I watch the Giants every week, and I could not think of it.
I don't know his first name, but his last name is Wheeler. Is it Chad Wheeler?
It's Chad Wheeler. See, three for three.
Name, but I knew it's Wheeler. 63, right?
You know his number? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I don't know why I know this. I think it's because in his first start, he had to block Watt, didn't he?
I believe that's correct, yes.
Yeah, so that I just remember watching him a lot in that game.
Remember seeing 63 falling over on the ground?
Yeah, it was a rough day for him. I mean, that's a tough ask. I felt bad for the guy.
Yeah, of course I feel bad for Chad Wheeler that he has to block J.J. Watt at any point, let alone in his first start. All right, so this is going to be the last sort of easier one. We're going to get some tougher injury replacements. Can you name me any of the three Bills starting offensive linemen last week?
Any of the three?
It only seems that way sometimes. Any three of the five offensive linemen for the Bills last week?
Well, oh my God, how can I remember his first name? Jordan Mills.
Former Bears.
It's a right tackle. He has been for a while. I believe that Miller is their right guard, right?
That's correct. You got two, and you should get three. Should be pretty easy.
Dawkins is the left tackle.
Deion Dawkins, correct. Three for three on the offensive line. Remember any other ones for bonus credit? I would not.
One of their guards grow?
Ryan Groy is the starting center for the Bills this week. Groy. So that's
God,
bonus.
This is not. I really don't like this game.
100% so far. What's the issue here?
The hard ones are going to be hard. I'm not looking forward to this.
All right, so let's get to some injury replacements along the offensive line. So last week, the Raiders were missing both starting superstar guards in Kelechi Osemele and Gabe Jackson. Can you name either of the players who were replacing them as starting guards for the Raiders.
Wasn't Chaz Green one of them?
Chaz Green was one of them. See?
Yeah. I do not know the second one, though. I have no idea.
Former.
I just remember seeing Chaz Green while watching that game. I was like, oh, man, Chaz Green is on the Raiders now?
That's what I also said. I did not know Chaz Green was on that team. I did not know who this other guy was, but he's
the other three offensive linemen. It's Parker, Roddy Hudson, and Colt Miller.
But that's not the game. The game is naming the other guard. He's a former Colts player, if that helps you at all.
I have no idea.
It's Denzel Good.
You could have given me a to know that other guy.
I did not know Denzel Good was on that team either. Same question for you about the Washington guards this week.
Oh, my God.
One of them has been very good as a utility lineman. Who?
Bowonko?
Luke Bowonko. You got the hard one. The other one's easier.
I have no idea who the other one is.
He's been playing very well as a utility lineman for Washington. That's your hint.
The guy's name starts with an N?
I mean... Yes, but you still have to say the name. I can't give you that.
It's like NES something.
Yes, his name is Nintendo. He is Super Nintendo. Ty Seki.
What is it?
Ty Seki.
Who? I'm not give up.
His name is Ty Seki. His name is Ty. I don't think you pronounce the N in his last name, so it would be Ty Seki.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's right. Okay, yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
He's been pretty good as a replacement for Trent Williams at tackle when Williams was out. Bill Callahan's a good coach, but they have nothing to work with on that offense.
Yeah, it turns out when all your offensive linemen get hurt, it's really bad.
Yeah, there's another Kyle Fuller who's currently on the roster as a backup guard for that team.
Good. I'm glad I have mine.
Okay, this is I'll give you, if you can get one of these two, I did not know either of these. You can either do the Broncos starting center, replacing Matt Paradise, or the Lions right tackle, who is replacing Ricky Wagner.
I believe the Broncos starting center is Brandon McGovern, correct?
Is that his first name? It could be. It is. Right? McGovern is the right last name, but that is not his first name.
What's his first name?
His first name is Connor. Connor McGovern.
Oh, Connor. That's right. I'm sorry. That's what I meant. He's a Mizzou guy. That's why I know that.
Oh, I didn't even know. Okay, yeah. Then you should definitely get that. It's a three-year starter at Mizzou.
I don't know why I did that. Connor McGovern. No, the right tackle for the Lions, absolutely not. That's you got me there.
That is rookie fifth-round pick Tyrell Crosby.
Yeah, thank you. That's you could have given me 200 guesses.
On our lads, his headshot is the size of, like, the entire screen for some reason.
Good. It's great web management.
All right, last question, and then we're going to finish up here on the show. This is the million-dollar question. I only knew two of these because I wrote about Josh Rosen's offensive line this week. So the Cardinals have lost all five of their starting offensive linemen over the course of the season, which is, it's almost like impressive that they could pull it off, that they lost all five of them. Mike Iupati was the last holdout until he went down on IR a couple of weeks ago. I think you should know one of them just because he was added, he is a prominent enough player who was added in free agency over the last couple of weeks. But can you name two of the five Cardinals starting offensive linemen?
I honestly think I can because Joe Barksdale is a right tackle.
That's
because I noticed that and I was like, oh man, Joe Barksdale, I wonder where he was going. And then the other one I can give you is Mason Cole because they drafted him in the third round. Their center.
I can't believe you got it. It's very frustrating. I wanted you to miss one of them.
I'm really frustrated I didn't get the other ones.
There is no way. I mean, I've heard of one of them and I didn't know he was on the team.
I have no idea who the other guys are. Any amount of guesses, I would not get there.
What was the game we played? You played Wire characters versus Ravens offensive linemen one year?
No, it was Wire characters against Ravens cornerbacks.
Ravens cornerbacks.
And then it was characters from The Walking Dead or Falcons offensive linemen.
So long ago. Ode Ibushi is the right guard for this team right now.
Ibushi, who did he play for at one point?
We're now playing officially. We're playing who he played for.
Well, Ode Ibushi. I mean, he'd gotten some time elsewhere.
I believe the Texans would have been where he played. No.
That's
yeah,
right.
The Texans would have been where he played.
That or Seattle sounds right to me.
He was on Seattle the next year.
Gotcha. Okay.
And he was in camp with the Raiders this year. The left side of that line protecting your first round pick is rookie seventh rounder Corey Cunningham with a K and Colby Gossett, who sounds like he would be a character on a WB show, to be honest with you.
Wonderful.
I think that was wonderful. I enjoyed it. I don't know if anyone
else did. That was fun. Again, I hope I acquitted myself okay.
I think you proved your point that, you know, NFL offensive lineman. If you had played that same game with me, I think I would have got a quarter of them right. And you got about 85 or 90%.
Thanks, buddy. You know, I do pride myself on that one just very esoteric area of my life.
Two 30 rocking offensive linemen. That's what you have nailed down.
That's really all I got.
That's all you've got, Mr. Miz. That's not true. You are a internet superstar. You have a variety of properties that I'm sure you want to plug here on the show.
Please go check out the Ringer NFL show. We recorded last night on Sunday, as we always do. I sound just as bad on that, I believe, as I will on this one. I am writing several times this week. I wrote about the Patriots today and whether this is actually the type of team we should start getting worried about based on their tough road to the playoffs and the fact that they don't really look like a Patriots team. And I will be writing a few more times this week as we kind of crank up to the playoffs. So please go check out theringer.com. I'd appreciate it.
Well, briefly, I mean, are the Patriots a team that we should be worried about?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, really? Again, it's very hard to win three playoff games. And if they end up getting the three seed, that's a tougher road than they've had in 9 years. And if you just think about the amount of penalties yesterday, drop passes, just the brain farts from Brady that have been uncharacteristic, I think at a certain point we have to start giving credence to just because they wear the Patriots uniforms doesn't mean that they're the Patriots we're used to. So I think that I'm starting to get a little bit concerned.
Here's the thing, though. I like being right. I like predicting things before they happen. I think I've hopefully gotten better at it over the years. I would much, 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 much rather be a year too late on the Patriots than a year too early.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. And I could be wrong. It's a dumb thing to predict that they're going to miss out, or it's a dumb thing to pick against them, and that's fine. But I just think that this team looks a lot different than the Patriots teams I've seen in recent years. And if your road in the AFC playoffs includes the Texans and the Chiefs and you can't block anybody, it's going to be a bad couple weeks.
I mean, do you attribute it just to older age? Is that the biggest thing driving these sort of difficulties for the Patriots?
I think that a little bit. And, yeah, maybe that is just it. I mean, I think that Brady making these decisions is pretty uncharacteristic, and I think Gronk isn't nearly as explosive as he was. I think that defensively they don't have a ton of talent on that side of the ball. I mean, think about what Jalen Samuels and Brandon Bolden have done to them in the last 2 weeks. They're getting gashed. So I don't know. It just seems like there are myriad issues, maybe a little bit too much to overcome this time.
Well, I think Brandon Bolden at least had the revenge game argument to be made for the Patriots, but Jalen Samuels.
That's true. Yeah, no, Jalen Samuels didn't have the same.
No such argument. I don't know. I think Gronk is definitely less than 100%, but like it also wouldn't shock me for the Patriots to score, 65 points over the next 2 weeks against the Bills and against the Jets and suddenly look fine heading into the postseason.
That wouldn't surprise me either. But if they end up getting the three seed and they have to play three playoff games, they have to play two of them on the road, it doesn't matter if you beat up the Bills and the Jets.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Well, we will see. I'm sure no one will remind you if you underestimated the Patriots, especially working at theRinger.com. It will not come up in the slightest. Sorry that we did not catch you on the best day in terms of your physical condition, but certainly appreciate you.
I'm happy to do it.
You playing through your fever, and this is sort of your flu game in some ways.
Yeah. I took the opportunity. I really wanted to just be my legacy to be etched in stone.
One day there will be a statue of Robert Mays recording with the empty DayQuil tabs surrounding
the
phone.
Just like all the Halls rappers next to me.
Robert Mays, thanks so much for coming on, buddy.
No worries, bud. Thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks so much to Robert Mays of The Ringer for hopping on the show. Before we wrap up here, just a brief note. We actually have a survey for you guys, which is going to help us make a better podcast for you. I know that the show is already perfect. Maybe it's not perfect, but certainly we can get closer to being perfect with your help. So to check out that survey, which will take you a few seconds, you can do it on mobile. It's not going to take up any part of your time, but it's going to help us out in terms of crafting the show. head to swerve.in/Barnwell. That's S, S, and Sam, WURV.in/Barnwell. My last name, BARNWELL. Fill out the survey. Again, mobile, totally fine. Take you a few seconds, no long at all. We'd really appreciate it. And we will take what we hear and apply it to the show. Thanks so much for listening, and more audio coming for you later this week.